This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Yes, Baseball Outside the Box is in New Zealand, Auckland, New Zealand. Can you believe it? We are just traveling all over the world. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and welcome to the show. We are thrilled to bring you Baseball Outside the Box from Auckland, New Zealand, where we just spent time the whole weekend with the International Sports Group, as you know, travels around the world, helping coaches get better. And we had some outstanding speakers, instructors, teachers, and role models here at the camp. First of all, our good friend from Crush Performance, we had Jeff Crochell, and boy, did he do a great job in athletic development with the athletes and coaches. Just outstanding. And on top of that, we had one of the best throwing and pitching guys in the world, the international pitching coach, they call him, or at least I call him the international one, because he is definitely the best, Ron Wolfert. And we are going to begin. We're going to have a special session here that we're going to talk about a little bit about a topic that is really worldwide and has taken the baseball world by, not surprise, but by something, because there's
by storm,
because the velocity of players has really increased, and we want to make sure that everybody understands the technicality behind a lot of this science. So let's first start off, welcome Ron Wolfert. Ron, how you doing, man?
It's great seeing you again, Pete.
All right, this is the second show, and if you guys remember, we didn't go over Ron's bio, but you know, Ron definitely, you know, he has a Texas baseball ranch, and he's been doing it for over 20 years, and travels around the world. He's spoken at the ABCA over five times. He's got, you know, major league players, minor league players. He's got so many players that come work with him, but he's also worked with a lot of young players. So first thing we're going to do is I want to ask Ron a little bit about, you know, your experience here. New Zealand's an awesome place.
Oh, my gosh.
People have been great. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's like being in another world.
It has been from the very get-go, from the very touchdown. First of all, New Zealand is a spectacularly beautiful place.
Yep.
And only surpassed by the wonderfulness of its people.
Yes.
And you and I and Jeff and Tom O'Connell have just been treated, and my wife Jill,
yes,
and your wife Beverly,
yes,
have been treated to such great hospitality by the Kiwis.
Yep.
And Ryan Flynn and all the New Zealand coaches and staff, and all the way down from their national team player and their new minor league, and all the way down to their eight and under. And so it's just been an amazing thing. And what excites you and I, and Tom, we just were at dinner tonight, and Jill, is that we're on, New Zealand is on the cusp of doing something no one has ever done, and that is they're building elite baseball from the ground up, and it's remarkable to see what they're doing, and they're doing it the right way.
Yeah, and folks out there, if you don't know Ryan Flynn, he's the president of New Zealand Baseball. He's a go-getter. He is intelligent. He's setting up a perfect plan from building the top and also building the foundation of the sport here. He definitely has a great idea. He's got a superb staff that supports him. And, you know, we're really excited. International Sports Group is excited being part of the program. We're being partners in the coaches' development. So if you get a chance, you're going to see New Zealand is just going to keep going up, up, and up. And you're
going
to see them on the international stage very soon doing some really great things. And they just joined the ABL, the Australian Baseball League. So they're going to have a professional team in that league. And that's going to really give kids a goal and, you know, the chance to, you know, look forward to doing something in the game also.
You and I have been doing this for quite some time, and we have been so many places, and so it's so rare to see such a special setup.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, it's just like the most fertile ground for an explosive growth that I've ever seen.
And boy, they have some athletes, don't they?
They really do. And it was so fun to work with several of them today. And I thought my favorite part of the whole clinic, I don't know about yours, was we took those two very good young pitchers, I don't know, probably 16, mm-hmm. 17 years old, and used them as the training specimens right in front of all the New Zealand or Kiwi coaches and let them see what elite training looks like with those guys. And everybody walked away. You could just see the players' eyes light up.
Absolutely.
And you could see the coaches shaking their heads. And it was a special hour.
Absolutely. And it blew them away because this clinic wasn't just about talking. It was interactive. The coaches were on the field. The players were on the field. Ron was working them. Crush was working with them. They saw actually how you actually teach and sometimes not teach because, as we'll get into. But Ron, let's go right to the heart of this particular show, which we want to really hit into. And, you know, there's that thing about all over the world now about velocity. You see a lot of kids wanting to throw faster and harder and all that. And you also see the side where, you know, people think that, hey, that may not be so good because kids are going to get hurt trying to throw too hard if they don't do it right. So let's get right into it and what your belief is. How's this type of program, velocity program, where do you start with this to make sure that everything's medically, or not medically, but everything's, you know, movement-wise, they're doing it right, and it's all safe for them?
Right. Well, first of all, great topic, and I think everybody is interested in it because, as you know, velocities in Major League Baseball are up, velocities in Minor League Baseball are up, mm-hmm. velocities in Division I is up, velocities in high school baseball are up. You know, when you and I were growing up, a 90-mile-an-hour arm was incredibly special.
Absolutely.
Right? We're almost the same age. You're a little younger than I am, but just by a tick, 90 miles an hour was incredibly unique. Now, you might have even two or three high school, on the top high school players, and let's say in the South, have two 90-mile-an-hour guys on the same high school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there. Now, at the same time, which is awesome, but at the exact same time, we realize that Tommy John's and injuries are also at an increasing rate, almost at an epidemic proportion. I read the other day there were more 15-year-old Tommy John's than ever before in 2018.
Wow.
So it's happening. So the question is, can we thread that needle,
mm-hmm.
Petey? Can we thread that needle between arm health and durability and velo enhancement? And the answer is yes, you can, but you cannot do it with a one-size-fits-all program. There is no program on the planet that is good enough that on paper, it can fit every kid in the baseball universe. It can't do it. Just like a doctor doesn't have a medicine that fits every single person that has an infection or blood pressure, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A physician, a doctor, needs a toolbox. He needs to have all these different vehicles in which he can customize the patient's path forward. Velocity enhancement is exactly the same way. And the problem, the most dangerous thing, is there are people now, you live in Chicago, it is not hard to find on the internet, almost, I see it every day,
mm-hmm.
on the internet, there are academies out there. And I get it. They want to have more clients. They want to have a program that people will pay money for. So they have a velocity enhancement program.
Mm-hmm.
And usually what they do is they go buy, they've gone on the internet and they've read this. There are probably, I don't know, a dozen of them. Some of them are pretty good. Some of them are not worth the paper they're printed on. But they get them, they get this process, and then they impose that process on everybody, every kid that's coming in.
Right.
Some of these kids are ready for it and will thrive. Several kids are not quite ready for it, and it won't hurt them, but they won't get much gain from it. But there's a certain part of the population, probably as much as 30%, typically 15 to 20%, that will be injured because of an inappropriate or misapplied process. What the ranch has been doing, as you know, Pete, the ranch has been the pioneer, one of the several few pioneers in baseball over the last couple of years, and some of them are friends of yours like Alan Jaeger and right, really some really, really good people. And in that process, there are people that are now have trying to shortcut that process. And we at the ranch knew at the very beginning that whenever you're trying to get energy to go through the system, just innately, that's going to put a greater risk to injury if you don't manage all the other variables. So we, the first thing that we did is we started to assess our guys to make sure they're ready for that push. Then we put them on a program, a very gradual, lengthy ramp up, so their soft tissue was prepared for those stresses once we got to velo, the push. As you know, Pete, Jill and I have a 20-year-old son. He's going to be 21 in a couple days, couple weeks. I would never put my son at significant risk of injury just to have a short-term gain, potential gain of velocity. If I'm not going to do that to him, I'm not going to do it to your son or anybody else's son. I refuse to do it. So that was the essence of what we did at the ranch. We made sure you can't avoid all injuries. You can't do it. But there is manageable risk. And then there's what you and I were talking about off camera or off tape. There's stupid risk. There's risk that is unnecessary to take. And I think a one-size-fits-all velocity program is one sheet, and you buy the balls and you get the velocity enhancement program, is stupid risk.
And that's what most people think out there. You go out and get the balls and you just throw them and you follow some type of program and you think you're going to get velocity. So what makes the difference between the good and the not so good when it comes to a program?
Really good. It's the assessment. You and I go in for a loan. The banker will have five or six different assessments to figure out if we could get the loan. You and I go in to a financial advisor for investment advice. He's going to give five or six different assessments to see what our needs are. If we're trying to send our son or daughter to the Ivy League, they're going to have four or five different assessments to see if what we need to do it. If we go into a doctor and we're going for a checkup, they have five or six different assessments. If we're going in for, if we need legal advice, they have assessments. Baseball needs the same thing. We start with a physical therapist doing a assessment to make sure we're balanced, we have no red flags, and we don't have any asymmetries or strength and balance.
Or like some injuries possibly, or some...
Yeah, or you have a histrionics of past injury, or right currently you have abject pain, or you have really poor recovery from day to day. There's a red flag.
Right.
Now, I'm going to say this, Pete. If anybody wants to get a copy of, a lot of people ask me, well, you just want me to go to physical therapist and say, check me out?
Yeah.
Well, for the listeners of your show, if they would contact us, and at the end I'll give you the contact information, but I'll give you the contact of our office. And if they just call their office and say, we would like a copy of the physical therapy product or process that I need to have my physical therapist fill out, we will mail it to them, no charge.
So you've already done the homework of everything that needs to be assessed prior to...
And every physical therapist or everyone that I know of can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, this isn't something that the average person can do.
No.
You need to find a physical therapist.
Just... But we will give them the assessment sheet.
Mm-hmm.
We'll mail it to them. If it's a coach, we'll mail it to them. You make copies.
Right.
And then have the physical therapist assess them in these areas, especially the scapula, especially the T-spine, ankle mobility, thoracic spine mobility, range of motion in the shoulder. Really important questions to answer. And so I'll give you the phone number, and then we'll do it again.
And we'll place it on our website also.
Right. And the ranch number is 936-588-6762. And just tell them that they heard about it on your podcast.
Perfect.
And tell Anna, our office manager, and say that you need the physical therapist therapy assessment tool, and we will, and then she'll write down your address and you'll send it to. That's our present. That's our gift to the listeners.
Perfect. That's a great place to start.
Yeah. Right, so we start just with structure.
Right.
Kind of like a car. If you and I have a Mercedes and then we have three fully inflated tire and one tire that's flat, before we even care what the engine is, we got to fix the flat tire. It's the same thing with our pitchers. We got to make sure that they have no flat tires,
mm-hmm,
before we put them on a velocity enhancement program.
Because yeah, that can blow out some other area.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? So the second one is movement pattern inefficiencies. And there you're going to have your pitching coach,
yep,
see if you have any inefficiencies in your movement pattern.
And I want to stop your movement pattern. I'll tell you why. Because, you know, I've watched out in the field all weekend. And, you know, a lot of people, if you're not familiar, you know, a lot of people call it mechanics. But Ron can explain why movement pattern is a much better word to use. But in the movement patterns, I want you to explain a little bit about, just briefly, you know, what type of movement patterns. Because you talk about continuous movement, flow, a movement that's natural almost,
that
we teach too much sometimes because we break that movement down in parts. If you can explain that a little bit.
Yeah, the reason we don't use mechanics, we use the term, two terms, mechanical efficiency and movement patterns, rather than mechanics. Mechanics means, to most of the baseball universe, positions in space and time.
Yes.
Right? So we end up teaching positions. You want to teach movements, not positions. A pitching delivery is a movement. It isn't a position. Mechanics so often are positions. And so we want to teach a flowing, continuous energy stream,
mm-hmm,
summation of force all the way through. And so that's the movement pattern. That's why we call it movement patterns. And so you're going to want to have your coach look for that, or you as a coach, or have a somebody that really knows video analysis to be able to do a high-speed video analysis of you. Because we're trying to find out, is there any red flag in there that if we go now push on the accelerator, now we have, so that we have four, put it this way for you, we now have four fully inflated tires, but the lug nuts on one of the tires is loose. Okay,
mm-hmm,
that's a disconnection. We got to get that straightened out. Or one of the rods in the engine is loose. We got to get that solved before we go on.
Mm-hmm.
Then another one is we call it a pain audit. And that is you just telling me about the history of your arm. How does it feel from day to day? Do you have pain in the medial elbow? Do you have pain in the anterior shoulder? Do you have pain in the bicep? Do you have pain in the the posterior shoulder? And the word pain scares a whole lot of people. And really what I'm saying is, do you have any discomfort that is you would not call normal discomfort? And it limits you in your ability to throw hard or often or regularly. And if you do, we don't go any further. We have a saying, as you well are familiar with, we start with the pain. If you have an issue with pain, just like the two young men that we had today, yes, we don't go any further. Yeah. I'm not putting them on a velocity enhancement program. And we just scale it this way. 0 to 10. 0 is no pain. 10 is excruciating. Dial 911. Oh my God, I think I tore something. If we have pain that is announced by the individual at 4 or more, right? So let me give you an example. If you said, Ron, I had a headache. I have a headache. And I go, oh, Pete, I'm sorry to hear that. How would you rank that headache 0 to 10? 10 being it's debilitating, we need to dial 911. Mm-hmm. And 0 or 1, it's just barely feel it.
Yeah.
And you go 3. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a small headache, right? If you say 6, I go, ooh. If you go 8, we need to move.
Right.
So we say any pain that is announced is not the right word.
Felt.
Yeah, that is described, mm-hmm, or said by the player. That's 4 or more. It's done.
Doesn't matter where that pain is.
It does. But still, any pain where it is even more adds to the importance.
Okay.
But any pain,
you stop.
4 or more. Now this makes good old common sense. If your arm is a 4, Pete, mm-hmm, and I put you on a velocity enhancement program, and I get the radar gun out, and you get a weighted ball, and you're going to try to throw, what is that 4 going to turn into?
Yeah, it could be 6 or 7.
Then what happens? When you have a pain at 6 or 7, you start to change your movement pattern, trying to avoid the pain. Guess what happens then? Now I'm really at risk of injury.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think what scares the bejesus out of me is selling an online program and then sending you the balls and knowing nothing. I'm only halfway through the assessments, but that should be enough to get just structure,
mm-hmm,
pain, movement pattern. If those things are not good, it's a really bad idea.
Yeah, you're not even getting to the velocity or to the weighted balls.
No.
Yeah, not even.
Why
close.
Would I do that? Right. Now, that doesn't mean that's forever gone.
Right.
But that just means right now it's not a good idea. And a good friend of mine, Randy Sullivan, who is really the rehab coordinator for the Ranch Consortium, he owns the Florida Baseball Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
He probably gets between 4 and 8 calls a week from people who have been on a weighted ball program on the internet,
mm-hmm,
and now are injured.
And that's the ones we know about.
And that's the ones we know about that actually made the call.
Exactly.
So it sounds sexy and it sounds wonderful with all these wonderful promises of velo enhancement. Velocity enhancement is a great process. It can really help people, but it's got to be at the right time for the right person in the right amount. It's like medicine. You got to make sure it's the right kind of medicine, the right dosage of the medicine, the right frequency,
mm-hmm,
and the right regularity of the medicine.
So if there's no pain now, what's the next process? Next step?
Really good. It's recovery. How well do we bounce back? Right? So there are people now.
So you're saying recovery, this is still before we were even talking about a velocity program.
Absolutely.
You got to make sure they can recover from anything or from whatever they're doing.
And I'll explain to you why. A lot of people, and especially major league and minor league pitchers, will not experience or have at least learned to deal with a certain level of uncomfortability in their arm. And so they'll report, there's the word I was going to say, they're going to report, like Scotty Kazmir, who's now retired from baseball, but Scotty Kazmir, when I first talked to him, he said to me, I said, how's your elbow? And he goes, I showed him the whole scale thing. He goes, it's a two, right? So on the outside, it's a little bit, but seems like it's pretty manageable, right? Well, at my next thing, I go, how is your recovery? How do you bounce back after either a game or a workout or a long toss session or, you know, and he goes, it's terrible. It's maybe not showing up in abject pain, but that stress to soft tissue is showing up. And it will eventually become pain if we have a high enough workload. Just a matter of time. Right. You're a ticking bomb.
Yeah.
So now we have structure. We have mechanics, mechanical efficiency, movement pattern. We have abject pain. And then we have recovery. And the last one is performance. Okay? And performance means if you have disconnections, it's hard for you to be consistent. You'll have tendency to throw balls high to your arm side or spike balls in the ground. Did you see it today?
Yeah, I saw it today, absolutely.
And it's always this. Now that I mentioned it to you, you'll go, oh my gosh, you're right, Ron. High to his arm side and then low to his glove side. He will let the ball go high to his arm side and then he will spike it and or spike it. Those are both disconnections. Also has trouble spinning a breaking ball for a strike, and it always feels like the ball is popping out. If they will report to you, feels like the ball is slipping. There's a disconnection. They will have trouble throwing fastballs, especially to the extension side or the glove side. They'll leave it always arm side. So with all that, right? So now you have all those assessments. We have structure. And then mobility and strength. We have movement pattern. We have abject pain. We have recovery. And then we have performance. After all that, now we decide, are you a candidate for velocity enhancement?
Wow.
Right? We're not even done yet. Let's say you're a candidate for velocity enhancement. Even though you're a candidate for it, doesn't mean your soft tissue is ready yet. So what we do is we make sure you have a long, lengthy 6-week ramp up so your soft tissue can go, all right, I see what you're doing here, and has its best chance. Now, this is such an important point. There's Pete Caliendo 1.0, and I clone you. I'm sure Beverly's not going to like this story. Yeah. And I clone you, and I make a Pete Caliendo 2.0.
Uh-huh.
On 1.0, I say to you, Pete, today you're going to go out, put on your track shoes with no training, and you are going to do a decathlon. You're going to do a long jump. Mm-hmm. You're going to do a 100-meter sprint. You're going to do a 400. You're going to do a pole vault, right? You're going to be, okay. And then I go to 2.0, and I said, okay, in 1 year from now, you're going to do a decathlon. You're going to do the decathlon. So we're going to start preparing your body for that, right? Which one at the second day of the decathlon is going to be completely sore, maybe not be able to walk downstairs? It's going to be 1.0
exactly.
That did not have the time. And what people miss is both Pete Caliendos can do it, but we got to prepare them to do it. Soft tissue doesn't just all of a sudden out of clear blue sky become ready and robust for full intensity.
So soft tissue has to prepare for that stress?
It does.
In the body. Okay.
It does. And soft tissue, you know, it just, we've all done it. Like, we've even done it, that's with this weekend warrior stuff.
Right.
But you and I have even done it. And I'll tell you when you and I have done it. Because you and I travel around and we've been wonderful places like Europe. And we go all these places. And an ISG event, this is pretty appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You and I go to Germany. And we're in, let's say, Munich. Or we're in Rome. And we decide, our wives go, we're going to go sightseeing today. And we go, wonderful, honey. So we go sightseeing. The next day, we up and downstairs, up and downstairs, up and downstairs. Next day, we're sore.
Absolutely.
Why'd that happen? We were not prepared for that. It's just unusual.
Sure.
So our soft tissue talks to us. Mm-hmm. And it says, Pete and Ron, stop it.
Stop it, yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah.
Give me some time. You should have warned me.
Yeah.
Ahead of time.
And that's what the ramp up is.
That's what the ramp up. That's exactly what the ramp up is.
Give our audience, you know, I know maybe not possibly everything. Give our audience an idea what that ramp up may look like.
The ramp up is basically some weighted ball work as arm care.
Okay.
So it's getting, the body is getting used to the load.
The weight.
And then a lot of regular throwing. Long toss, playing catch,
mm-hmm.
that we start at a low or moderate intensity. And then during that 6 week, we cycle in here's the cycle. Light day, medium day, heavy day, light day, medium day, heavy day, light day. We cycle in light, medium, and heavy. Therefore, we're allowing our arm to push, then back off, and then push, and then back off, and the arm always responds. So it's weighted balls as part of arm care,
mm-hmm.
and then a structured cyclical ramp up with our throwing, starting from a very fundamental or foundational thing. And it takes about 6 weeks for the arm to go, okay.
Is there some movement pattern corrections during that time?
There should be, especially if you didn't do very well in your assessment.
Assessment. And you would know that in the assessment, obviously.
Right. So let's say you didn't pass out of the assessment. That's the first thing that needs to be going on. Now, I believe instead of people like, oh my gosh, Ron, this sounds like a horribly long process, you can literally, in all fairness, you know what's an incredibly long process? Having Tommy John and trying to come back from that.
Yeah, I never understood that, you know, because a lot of times what happens is, and you see it all the time, instead of people getting ready, prehabbing, let's say, you know, to try to prevent an injury, not that you can prevent them all, they didn't do it, so now they're going to work twice as hard after Tommy John because that's a brutal workout to get back into, they say it takes over a year.
Right? Absolutely, absolutely. So you nailed it. So there's the process. And then from there, it is still an accentuating and cycling process,
mm-hmm.
of intensity and rest. And it's, you know, how good did Jeff Kreshel do to this weekend on recovery?
Oh, he just blew him away. Absolutely.
He's singing our song.
Yeah.
It's exactly.
Yeah.
You push, then you pull back.
Yeah.
And you push,
yeah.
then you pull back. Most people either don't push, and then blow it up, or they just push. It's either one of those.
Yeah.
Neither one of those work. It's push, pull back, push, pull back.
And you saw him do that in the warm-ups.
You did.
Yeah. He didn't do anything fast. Yeah,
it was literally brilliant.
And interesting, you guys have known each other, but you didn't talk about any of this. And that was unique in the clinic, in the program, because he did things, you did things, you didn't talk really about it, and you have the same type of
Absolutely.
Philosophy due to your backgrounds, not just because yep. you just it just came out of the sky. this is research you guys have done. This is studying you've done. I know a lot. You've done a lot. You put a lot of work into this.
Absolutely. And the thing that's true is soft. We know a lot about soft tissue, mm-hmm. and so that is just a principle of soft tissue. And of course we know that, right? It's really, if you think about it, Pete, it's common sense.
Yeah. Now we get to, okay, you get to the end here. You've done the recovery. You feel good about the athlete. Now, you know, all this is part of a velocity program, obviously, because you're getting the body ready. Now you start the velo program, right, with the weighted balls. This is going to be I don't know if it's a tough question because it's a general question, but the average person out there, how do they know the right velocity program with weighted balls? How do they know the program's correct? That can't be easy for somebody to understand. Now, obviously, we're going to recommend the ranch. I mean, you guys have done your research. We know all that. So people listening are going to know that. But what about the ones that aren't listening? You know, and maybe, you know, I'm traveling around the world. Some of our ISG people are traveling around the world. You know, we're going to tell them, hey, listen, you got to go to the ranch or talk to Ron at the ranch. But how do you know? I mean, is there a way to find?
Yeah, okay. This... It's a really good question. Here's the first thing. You have to listen to your arm. Mm-hmm. And what happens so often is we put these kids in situations that they're trying to follow a process instead of asking them. At the ranch, the most frequently asked question is, give me your arm number 0 to 10. We say it maybe 2 or 3 times every day. We want to know the status of your arm. Excuse me. Because if your arm is good, we can push. If your arm is let's wait. If your arm is bad, let's deal with it. And so I think we have Timothy Galway, the great inner game coach, said awareness itself is curative. You've got to be aware. Alan Jager says you need to be intimate with your arm. They're saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. You have to pay attention. Most kids just ignore it. We want them to really be intimate with their arm. I think Alan's got it exactly right. Now, I'm going to back up something you said. You said now we're ready for weighted ball program. Before, at the ranch, we're very unique in this way. Before we actually use weighted balls, we go to weighted ball and the variation of the weighted ball with overload and underload. We actually just start with a baseball and we go, we throw to our velocity enhancement program with a radar gun and just a regular baseball. And we test that out first before we go to a weighted ball. And the reason we do that is we test it out. And then what do you think we do after the very first session? We say, okay, you're good. It's time to push. And we push them. And almost always we never have any throws that are going to be over about 24 full effort throws on any velocity enhancement day. We may even go up to 30. 36, but at the very beginning, it's a smaller number. Mm-hmm. The most important thing is the next day, I'm just going to use you as my example. You're now ready, Pete, for velocity enhancement program. So I'm going to have you do it. And we're going to start out with just a baseball, and we're going to find the drills in which there's a science to this as well, or a better way to say it, there's an art to this. Mm-hmm. You're going to tell me the 3 or 4 drills that you feel the most connected in. We will radar you during those drills. Leave the other ones alone. And the most important day is the next day. You got your numbers, and maybe you're happy with them, maybe you're not, but we've recorded them on all the drills. And the next day, I see you and go, all right, Pete, how's your arm? If you go, Ron, I'm lucky I could wipe my butt today, then that's a problem. We got to back off. Mm-hmm. If it goes, it's a little tender. Mm-hmm. We better pay attention. And if you go, you know what, $1 million, then we keep you on that process.
Right.
The next 4 days. Really important part for your listeners, mm-hmm. never have more than 2 pushes a week. 2 pushes in a 7-day period.
When you say pushes.
Velo, you're trying to throw it as hard as you can.
Okay.
And make sure between the 2 pushes, 24-hour, and I mean, I'm sorry, 48-hour rest period in between those 2 pushes to give you a chance. You want to go back-to-back days. You want to give your body a chance to recover.
So we're saying we're using the weighted balls just twice a week?
Oh, remember, 2 different days. We're going to start with just a baseball. When you don't have any pain.
I got you. Ramping up.
Then we start to go. And then here's what we do. We start to go. The weighted ball program is very complicated and very, actually complicated isn't the right word. It's complex.
Complex, sure.
It's deep. So I think I would bore everybody if I went through all the pieces.
Yeah, it's impossible.
But basically what it is that we start with just a weight that's just above a baseball mm-hmm. and that's the overload, and a weight just below the baseball. So the variance is fairly small, lets you push with those. Mm-hmm. And then as your soft tissue gets more robust, we go heavier and we go lighter.
Okay.
Right? So there's the general.
Okay. Thing. So somebody out there that's doing another weighted program, obviously as soon as they start getting pain, you know, if they get it right away, that's a signal.
Perfect.
Something's not right.
Shut it down.
And they should be checking in to find out, is this the right program for their son or daughter?
And you and I just heard today of a story mm-hmm. of somebody that exact thing happened
absolutely.
To.
So when we talk about the assessment and this protocols that we're following and the ramp up, with this program, the age doesn't matter as long as you follow these protocols.
The age does not matter. The age does not matter. There are probably 17-year-olds that are not ready for it, and there are some 10-year-olds or 8-year-olds that are. So people are like, oh, Ron, you can't be serious. You're not going to have a 8-year-old. The younger, of course, it's going to be slightly different. You're going to have a lower volume. Mm-hmm. You're going to have actually greater stretches of recovery, and you probably will have less a variance on the weight. You won't quite go as high as a variance. You'll keep it pretty narrow for between 7 ounce and 3 ounce. You won't vary too much from that.
Within that.
Yeah.
Okay. And what are we talking about when it comes to the program overall? You know, are players going to see results right away within 7 weeks? You know, everybody's different, but what's the expectation here? And not only what's the expectation, but what do you do with this program? It's a continual program. You don't just stop and all of a sudden restart it next year.
That's really good some points. So let me go through this. Number one, the best time for a velocity enhancement program is in your off season.
Okay.
Don't do it in the season. You're pitching a game, that's a push day, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't want to do it in season, do it off season. And there's a classic, I'll just stop with that. There's a classic point that you should have an off season. So often now our young people have no off season.
Right.
Well, if you have no off season, I don't think you have a very good chance of velocity enhancement. I just don't think it's. And there's the other thing, right?
But you're saying off season from the program,
from playing.
Oh, from playing
in a game.
Ah,
right.
Interesting.
Yeah, playing.
Yes.
Full blown playing, and this is the other reason that this internet buy the balls, get your thing, is that there's no periodization of that either. It just assumes you could do that in season. Here's your program. Here are the balls. Go get it, Sparky.
Yeah.
The problem is if I'm in the middle of the season, that's a terrible idea, right? So there's no guidance to it. There's no context. A great program has to have customization, it has to have personalization, and it has to have context. It has to have context as far as where are you in relationship to those five assessments, and then where are you in relationship to your yearly performance? Are you in the middle of your high school season, or in the middle of your summer season? Mm-hmm. Are you showcasing? Are you what is that?
Yeah,
they're all different.
Yeah,
you're a college guy. Are you in the summer? Are you in the preseason? Are you in the postseason? Right.
Since you mentioned in season, stay away basically from the varsity program in season. So we're talking about in season. That's where you need to really be good in recovery.
Absolutely. Well, and recovery is an all-time thing, but even more important, you want to spend your time in season with connection, making sure your mechanical efficiency is good mm-hmm. and your recovery is good.
Will you keep that velocity if you do that? If you went in at 90 miles an hour, are you going to drop because you didn't continue the velocity program throughout the season?
It's a really good point. And the answer is, if you are moving and pushing in an athletic way, you will maintain almost all of it. But on the other hand, you start to move slower. You don't throw as much. You try to, there's some other things that are happening. You may lose velo if you don't keep that up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you ask a very important question for coaches and players. Okay, what can I expect?
Mm-hmm.
Almost like every infomercial, results vary.
Yes.
Now,
of course,
I would say that a good 12-week velocity enhancement program after these five assessments, a good 12-week ramp up for the average kid is going to gain between 3.5 and 6 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, oh, there's part of your audience going, oh, that's awesome, but I need 12. Then there's people in the audience go, oh, BS. Ron, you can't give that to Chapman, and he's going to gain 5 miles an hour. That put him at 110.
Yeah.
And the answer is both of those are right.
Mm-hmm.
What makes this vary is where you're already at in your performance level. If you're an Olympic sprinter and you're a gold medalist, how hard is it to shave a tenth off 100 meters? Incredibly hard. If I'm just a beginning sixth grader that lost 25 pounds because I was a big tub of goo and I lost all this weight, how easy is it for him to drop 3/10 off 100 meter? Easy.
Yes.
Right? It's the same. So results vary because individuals vary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you still, so now, what about if I needed more than 4 or 5 miles an hour? I'm that far behind. You need to be thinking about a 32-week, your off-season even is more important. You need to really have a very dedicated 30-week off-season program for velocity enhancement that filters in cycles and easy days, light days, hard days, cycles all that in so that you can keep pushing and keep breaking homeostasis, because homeostasis is always there. And homeostasis is what makes it hard to lose weight. My weight is set. So for me, I can, eat less. I can drink water. I can skip the wine, not eat a dessert. And I will still find it hard to drop weight because the thermostat tries to keep it the same. So homeostasis, that's what homeostasis is.
Interesting.
And that's what everybody is under. And so for you to break it, you'll make that little gain of 3 to 5, and then what does the body do? Pete, that's good. We're good. Right? And you go, no. We want more. So a little, it'll be up, and then you'll have another little jump, and then it'll go, Pete, we okay? We okay? And you go, no, 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 I want more. And then you'll have another plateau, and then you'll have another one. That's, and the plateaus are what get people, because most people give up in the plateau. Stay with it. And as long as you're cycling, as long as you're taking care of the arm, making it be healthy, more robust, soft tissue, you know, you're going to get, you'll continue that.
All right. So we've talked, velocity, obviously, you know, now let's talk about, because that thought process might be out there for some of our audience members, control.
Perfect.
Do you give up control? And, you know, because controls is important also.
Absolutely.
And we want velocity, but we also want people to understand how important control is too.
Really good point. Now, if we have a 7-day cycle and 2 of it is on velocity, that leaves us 5 for something else. We at the ranch do 3 command and 2 connection. So we have 2 days. What actually we have is the day after we push, we have a connection day where we go back and we try to make sure we reconnect, re-synergize, re-synchronize our movements. So it's a mechanical day for other people. That leaves us 3 days in which we're commanding, we're focusing on command. There's the goal, right? So people are like, well, can you have it all? If you have variable goals through the week, 2 days velo, 3 days command, 2 days mechanical efficiency or connection.
That tells the whole story right there, because what I'm looking at right now, I'm looking at 2 days velocity only, and I'm looking at 5 days where you said connection and mechanical movements. So the emphasis is on those two more than anything. I think that's where people make the mistake.
Yep,
they think every day is a velocity program, you know, and it just keeps going and going and going.
And I would say that the thing that I would tell people is at the ranch, we're known for velocity enhancement, but really it kind of bugs us.
Yeah.
Because velocity enhancement will help you win a teddy bear at the carnival, but it will not help you become a major league pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be a holistic thrower. Command, stuff, recovery, consistency, command of not only your fastball, but of your breaking stuff, creating better, sharper breaking stuff. And so to us, we'll spend far more time working on the other stuff. We only have dedicated 2 days that we're working for velo.
You know, and I love it. I just love to hear it, and I'll tell you why, because the next part I want to get to, and I saw it firsthand, since you mentioned the word connection, I saw the connection balls.
Right.
I saw how they worked, and we don't have to go through all the program and everything. I just want, what I want you to do is explain the connection ball, because we also saw Verlander in a lot of magazines and pictures that he uses the connection balls, also recently called you, I believe.
Right.
Talk about the connection, how important that is, what it really means, and how the balls work, and even if it's just one part of the body.
Well, connection balls are really simple. They're balls to help you feel your body being connected as it unravels from the feet to the fingertip and throw the ball. A disconnection is simply one body part working independent from the trunk and spine. The connection ball helps you feel that and make sure that it stays connected, or that you have integrity from feet to fingertip. So connection balls are really important to us. So we actually basically have 3 tools that help us do that. The connection ball is one. The Duro Throw Sock is another.
We'll get into that.
And the connection club is the other.
Right.
They're all really good. None of them are panaceas. They're not a fix for anything. They're just a tool. And they can really be beneficial. And so our utilization of them as a conglomerate mm-hmm. or as a grouping has really been beneficial to the ranch.
And what I learned when I was out there was let's take the connection ball because you said it very well. When you were outside also, not everything works all the time for every person the same. Yeah. Okay, so let's take the connection ball in one area. I saw this. A lot of young players, even older players, you know, their front side, they don't use it at all. They use their throwing arm, but the front side doesn't do anything. So you had them grab the connection ball. Now, that can be done in many ways, but you had them grip it. And what I saw, once they gripped the connection ball, there was more use of the front arm. So that would be a great example.
Yes.
Now, that ball can work for you in with that grip, but it may not work for me.
Sure. Yeah, it's a tool. So think of it. What the connection ball is how I use it to describe it to other coaches. Is I have a toolbox and I have a crescent wrench. The crescent wrench may be really good to work on my sink, but it's terrible to work for a watch. The connection ball is the same way. Some players just in a certain position, the connection ball makes sense to their body.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it doesn't. It's like speaking French to a guy from Nebraska.
Yeah, right.
it doesn't resonate. So think of, you saw me today in my lecture. Think of your drills and your tools as simply a stimulus. And you play with it. And see if that stimulus elicits the response that you're trying to get.
Yeah.
And sometimes it will, and sometimes it won't. And that kind of tells you what tool to use, what drill to use. And that's the art of coaching and teaching.
And you may see that visually, or you may see it because you ask the players a lot of times.
Absolutely.
How they feel.
Primarily, I ask the players, but almost always it coincides with what I'm seeing.
Which is visual. And then we get to now the part that you gave me the pleasure of, you know, working that station after I watched you operate with it, the connection club.
You did really well at it too. Well, bravo to you.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, that's probably because I'm the host of the show. Ron's being nice to me. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm not. Okay. You earned that dessert. You earned that. And the reason you did, let me just say this to you. Mm-hmm. The reason you did such a good job with it is because you did not overteach or overcoach the station. You watched. This is really important for everybody listening.
Yeah.
You observed. You let them try to figure it out for themselves. Then after four or five, you give subtle direction to guys that needed direction. But for the most part, you stayed out of the learning. I watched it. Bravo to you. That's the reason, in all fairness, the reason I gave you the station is because I thought you would be good at it. And I was right. But a lot of coaches are too busy trying to strictly choreograph their players' movements, mm-hmm. and they interrupt the learning.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up because it is such a common teach. Is to teach right away. I was at fault at it. There's other coaches, I'm sure, that's listening, going, man, I've done that so many times. So I'm glad you brought that up because I think there's so much value to letting the body feel and understand it. I really saw that. So the Connection Club, now tell us, tell us how it came about, what it can do, and you know, why you're using it.
Well, the real story, almost every tool has a story. Mm-hmm. And the Connection Club is no different. I had a minor league pitcher. Well, no, he was a major league. He was up and down both. He pitched probably 20 games in the big leagues. He was a major league guy, minor league guy, major league guy, minor league guy. He constantly had elbow problems. Constantly. And he would do always tubing. He would do always strength. He would do his arm carry, he would do his ramp up, and he would do his strength. He's very, very mobile, very strong. So in the assessment of physical, A+. but he still had pain. And and on video, Pete, it looked pretty good. I would have given him an A-. Everything indicated that he should not have elbow pain. But there it was. So I'm there one day, almost at wit's end, trying to help him. And we had him throw a football, and we had him throw things, and it just, this elbow pain was right there, right? So my son, my son is a switch hitting catcher. So my wife will tell you I've spent a small fortune with equipment for him, bats, wood bats, aluminum bats, specialty bats, tees, machines. At the wall was a little one-arm bat. And if you know what a one-arm bat, it's a little smaller bat. Mm-hmm. And so I saw it there, and I'm like, hey, let's try this. I had him hold the bat. It was probably 24 inches long. It was a literal bat with tape at the end. It was aluminum. So I gave it to him. I go, choke up on that about 4 inches and throw that. He gets up and he throws it and he goes, wow, that felt awesome. And I wasn't ready for that answer. I went, what? Hmm. I'm just playing. I'm spitballing.
Yeah, so, right.
Right. I'm out of ideas. And I go, throw it again. He throws it again. And he goes, if a baseball only felt like that, that would be awesome.
Wow.
Right? So here's what happened. We threw probably for the next 4 or 5 throws the club, because I thought, probably you're thinking as well, yeah, right, Ron. Give him 4 or 5 throws and it's going to start to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. It felt awesome. So now, what do you go from there? There's really, a lot of people will go, well, he can't, there's no league he can do where he throws a bat into a hitter. So where are you going to go with that? Well, here's what I did. I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to throw 3 times bat. Then I want you to pick up a baseball, and I want you to throw that. And then go back to the, and see how the baseball felt. So he threw 3 of the club, and then he threw the baseball. And he goes, felt fine. For the first time in over an hour and a half, he threw a baseball fairly hard, was zero pain.
Wow.
That's a mystery.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened. And I go, okay. So I said, keep throwing the baseball. He threw in about pitch number throw number four. He goes, I can start to feel it coming back again. I go, oh, go back to the club. Throw the club. He goes, oh man, I like that club. And the rest of the day was 3 or 4 on, 1 or 2 off. 3 or 4 on, 1 or 2 off. 3 months later, he's back pitching professional baseball with no arm pain.
Hmm.
Now, it's a really unique case, so I tell my staff, we got to replicate this.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Mr. Oates, Oates Specialties, Robert Oates, and I go, I want a bat this long, and I showed him, and I want a bat that weighs this much. And so he goes, well, I can't find that. Maybe we can make it with wood.
Hmm.
So he did it, and he sent me a copy of one, and we used it. And I go, I called him, I want it shorter. And he shorts it up, oh, it's too short. It's not heavy enough. About 6 months later, we finalized the Connection Club. The Connection Club has been a remarkable tool, and it's literally helped, even though it's on its infancy, it's literally helped hundreds of young men already.
And used predominantly for?
Forearm fly out and forearm play.
Because of the weight, it's hard to fly out, or your body will feel
it. It's hard to have any mechanical inefficiency with it, but we use it primarily for play, because play is a sequencing problem. It's having some play in there, and it's mistimed. What play is the mistimed internal, I'm sorry, mistimed external rotation of the throwing shoulder and arm. And it's hard to see. It's hard to notice. Mm-hmm. The club solves it because it cuts right to the issue. And so it's been remarkable.
Yeah, and I saw that today. And I want to address this, too, before we get to the next part. You know, you had me do the club and the ball, and you mentioned it now, ball, club, and you called that blending. Explain blending and what it is, and also why it's so important in the teachings of everything we do, not just in pitching.
We call it neuromuscular blending, but in motor learning, it would be called a degrees of freedom problem. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, as the arm going around, it has places where it can go that's not efficient. So what the connection ball, the Durethrow sock, and the connection club does is it limits or reduces the variability of the activity. It stabilizes it. It encourages, or in most cases, creates a co-contraction of the shoulder, of the of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And then that's wonderful. But the problem is, if we just did 30 of those and then we go to the baseball, that neuromuscular pattern would start to be extinguished over time, and we would go right on back to the old way we throw. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we blend it. It's on, off, on, off, on, off. So the body starts to see that those are not separate things, but they're much more similar things, and it will transfer or carry over to your regular throwing. And that is the essence of training in player development, is to get something to transfer from the drill to the game. Mm-hmm. From the tool to the movement pattern in competition.
And that's the toughest thing to do.
It is.
Because we've all done it. We said, we do this a lot of times, and you'll do it right in the game, and then we watch the game, and it's not happening. And obviously, this is a great... And baseball's been traditional, so it's been not wanting to change. And, you know, now we need new methods and theories to make, you know, make things better. And I saw it firsthand, so I think it's fantastic. One of the things we saw on the field... was we had two young men with some soreness, I believe.
Medial elbow pain.
And in the elbow, some pain in the elbow. And you have a product that's called the Duro Throw Sock.
Right.
I want you to explain that product, how you came about it, and what it does, because obviously you've had this product for a while and it's done miracles. I say miracles, it's not a miracle, but I saw it today in the field with the young men.
So, Randy, let me back up. I have been going to the American Sports Medicine Institute course of injuries for baseball course in Birmingham, Alabama for many years, mm-hmm. Probably 10 times over the course of time. That's Dr. Andrews' yep. group. A guy by the name of Dr. Axe, and I apologize, I don't remember his first name, probably 15 years ago came up with a sock. And it was a throwing sock. And what it is, you put a ball, you put a ball in your hand, and then you put a literal sock over your hand, and then you do a simulated throw, and you let the ball go, and the ball goes into the sock. Mm-hmm. And I thought, at that point, that's a brilliant idea. Well, the medical people of that time just excoriated him for the idea, and they said, this is terrible, it's going to create more stress to the arm and all that. And so I went, well, maybe it wasn't a good idea. They know a lot more than I do.
Sure.
Well, here's the deal. They were right, but they didn't even know why they were right. They were right because Dr. Axe, at that point, his sock was too long. It was too long. And so therefore, the ball was thrown, the arm gets to full extension, then the ball hits the end of the sock, and it would pull on it. It actually it's actually a little bit dangerous because the sock is too long and it's not very good. Now, Randy Sullivan, once again, the owner of the Florida Baseball Ranch, and I work very closely together, and we determined that the sock should be about 3 to 6 inches out from the tip of the fingers. That's the end of the sock. Mm-hmm. And we just agreed on 6 afterwards. We didn't realize at the time, but that guess was magic. We stepped in it and lucked into it at the same time. Mm-hmm. It was pure luck. It was not brilliance. It was not even really innovation. It was just dumb luck. Sometimes you get lucky. And what happens is, the reason the DuraThrow sock works so well, it's a canvas sack that you tie down with Velcro around your wrist. You put a ball in your hand. You literally throw the ball, simulate a throw, let the ball go, and the ball hits the end of the canvas sock. But because it's 6 inches, right when the arm is in external rotation and still flexed and pronated, the ball hits the end of the sock, and that encourages and actually creates, for the most part, a co-contraction of the posterior shoulder and stabilizes the shoulder. And it's a phenomenal deceleration tool to teach your appropriate and good patterns of decel, but more than anything, or just as much of anything, it's really good strengthening in a very skill-specific way for the posterior cuff.
Sure, and you mentioned a word, deceleration. Explain that part, because it sounds like the deceleration part is one of the most dangerous phases of the throw.
Well, and Mike Marshall is the one that's really responsible for this. Obviously, Paul Nyman is the first one that's really responsible for the velocity enhancement gains in the United States. Paul Nyman at SetPro is every velocity enhancement program designed on the internet or in the planet today, including the ranch, is a derivative of some sort of Paul Nyman's. Mm-hmm. Deceleration from the ranch and most everything that's taught from that is a derivative of Mike Marshall's work and his understanding of how the arm pronates, decelerates, and dissipates the force throughout the body and not just on the rotator cuff or the soft tissue of the shoulder. And what Mike Marshall said many years ago was that the body will only be able to accelerate something as efficiently as it can decelerate.
That's a key.
It is. And so a lot of what he does, now I think there's some Marshall people that would scoff that the ranch is claiming that they're doing Dr. Marshall's work, and I will tell you right away that we do not do Mike Marshall's throwing program. Mm-hmm. However, just because we don't do Dr. Marshall's throwing program doesn't mean we don't have great respect for the work that he did in deceleration and deceleration patterns, and that significantly influenced what we did and how we train our throwers. We don't use the Marshall program. We don't do that, but we do our own interpretation, our own variety, our own hybrid, mm-hmm. right? And our velo enhancement program is a hybrid of the Paul Nyman program, mm-hmm. right? And so that's the way all of us work. And matter of fact, if a lot of people listening ever get a ranch program, you're going to know that I'm going to highly encourage you to create your own hybrid from that.
Okay, now, but when you're talking about deceleration, I know we're on a podcast. It's not that easy to explain. But explain to the audience a little bit about when the arm, after it pronates, what it should do. Should it maintain flex? It should go, where it shouldn't go? You know, some of the cautionary areas. And on top of that, not only that, you also mentioned, and I think this is common around the industry, A lot of coaches want kids to get into a fielding position, you know, and that could cause an issue from what we talked about.
Absolutely. So good deceleration patterns are really an unraveling of the entire body, the ankle, the hip, the T-spine, the shoulder, and the arm, as it is, as the energy comes through it. The good news is pronation is 100% natural. We get beat up on this all the time. There are people that are a little bit vitriolic that like to say, oh, sure, Wolforth will teach you, or the ranch will teach you to pronate. What a wonderful thing. Pronation happens natural, and he's going to charge you for what happens naturally.
Right.
Here's the deal. We don't teach pronation. We make sure that you're indeed pronating and you're decelerating efficiently. Mm-hmm. Now, as I told the Kiwis this weekend, pronation is indeed 100% natural. That does not mean that everybody who does it is exceptionally efficient at it. Just like everybody without an injury runs, but how few of them run with the efficiency of Usain Bolt?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody breathes, but how many breathe of the efficiency of a yoga master?
Mm-hmm.
So while it is true, the critique is true that pronation is natural, it is also true that pronation is like any other thing. You can have, it can be more efficient or it can be less efficient. Mm. And if it's sufficiently less efficient, we have a problem.
Mm.
And so that's the reason we're going to pay attention to it. And so often people who scoff at it and go, control center of gravity and it'll happen, or is that right? Really? So where does that also work anywhere else in the universe? Is just do this and this will always happen. It's hard to find any direct cause and effect in almost anything with humans, right? I smoke a cigarette, am I going to get cancer? No. I don't smoke a cigarette, does that mean I'll never get cancer? Right. No.
No guarantee.
Right? So it's a specious argument,
mm-hmm.
and one made by people who just want to have an issue and beat us up with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not fair and it's not true, right? So patterns of deceleration matter, especially as we throw the ball harder and harder and harder. We're going to have to be more and more and more efficient at our deceleration, just very much like a Maserati race car is going to have better brakes than a Volkswagen 1964 Beetle.
Mm-hmm. What's that deceleration going to look like with the arm? What should it look like for the average coach?
We do not ever want to have, obviously, pronation is thumb turning up, little finger turning in.
Mm-hmm.
The arm stays flexed, and you're actually pronating and decelerating from the scapula, not the hand or the wrist or the elbow. It's your whole body turning that over. It's not just the pronation of the fingers or the elbow or the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
It is a unraveling and a dissipation of force from the ground up. But the key thing is keep the shoulders rotating, keep the arm flexed, and don't let the arm keep going and your shoulders stop rotating. That's where you get stuck.
And is there, now I know I heard you say something today, you talked about the shoulders rotating, but also I know it's not, folks, you can't see it visually, but I think you'll be able to understand it. You know, when you do follow through, you don't want that coming across your body. You want it coming more.
If there's a zipper,
mm-hmm.
we call it crossing midline.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to have your throwing elbow cross the midline of your body. We want to have, actually, you want to have the arm and shoulder almost trying to chase the rest of the body rotating instead of leading it.
Sure.
So that's really important. The reason that happens, Pete, primarily is because the thoracic spine and the shoulders for so many youth players stop as what we call a front side block. And that's where the arm, the literally the glove side, in an effort to stay closed, stays on the throwing side of the zipper, and actually the arms cross each other on the D-cell. Hmm. So your arms make an X at the end. This is a Strasburg move.
Yeah.
And that's horrible. Mm-hmm. It's very, very bad. A glove side block, we call it a glove side block, is really bad. The second thing that I want to talk about with the glove side is we focus so much on the glove. I don't like to talk so much about the glove. The glove is important and gives us some feedback. But really, we really pitch from the elbows toward the center of our body, not from the elbows away. We need to be focusing on the proximal part of our body, not the distal parts. And when we have good glove side is when we get a good good scap load from the glove side, right? Instead of just having it out here, we want to have because we're trying to create symmetry, if you remember. So if our throwing side has a scap load, we want to have a scap load also on the glove side. Then this stabilizes, and then the body rotates into a good and around the glove side, right? We don't want it to continue to rotate. It'll look like in the eye it does, but it's because the body is rotating, not because the arm is acting independently. I'll go back one more time and say this again. A disconnection is simply the body working independently, one part of the body working independently from the trunk and spine. We don't want that. We want it to work in conjunction with or in synergy with the trunk and spine.
All right, so since you said that, one last thing before, I know I said one last thing, but now I got to ask this, because this is something that even in the past I have taught, and I'm sure many coaches have taught the same thing, and that is the sequencing, you know, the 1, 2, 3, stop here and then throw, and that's what you're talking about, that's the disconnection, yet a lot of people have been teaching it.
Well, I'm going to go back, before I answer that, you asked me about fielding position for D-cell.
Yes.
You do not want to teach your players to be in a good fielding position as a primary teach. You want to teach them to become a good decelerator. Then when they're at the end of their good deceleration, then go spring back into a good athletic position. This is what Greg Maddux did.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to start short and finish in a good fielding position, because what we're going to start to do is we're going to stop rotating way earlier, and then that our deceleration is really put at risk. So telling a pitcher to make sure you stop in a good fielding position is a bad cue.
Sure.
All right. So now let's go to your question about teaching 1, 2, 3, teaching whole, part, whole, sort of thing. The whole, part, whole is not bad, but teaching by position or pitching by numbers is a very, very bad idea. And there's a reason we do it, and that is we're trying to control the uncontrollable. We go back to the degrees of freedom problem. We try to eliminate the degrees of freedom and just it's position 1, then position 2, and position 3, that sort of thing. Paul Niman said it really well in the early 80s. He said, the magic isn't in the dots or the positions. The magic is what happens between the dots. Hmm. So it's not just 1, 2, 3, 4. The magic is what happens between it. So if we're focused only on 1, 2, 3, 4, we interrupt the natural synchronization, synergy, summation of force that's created by athleticism. You, whenever you go 1, 2, 3, 4, what are you going to look like? You're going to look more mechanical. You're going to look less fluid. So fluidity, freedom, movement is athleticism is paramount in all teaching. It becomes the cornerstone. So athleticism, we have a saying, and I like to finish with this, Pete, as far as my part, is this. Whenever in doubt, return to athleticism.
Sure.
If you're a coach and you go, oh, geez, I don't know, return to athleticism. It will never steer you wrong.
Fantastic.
Return to athleticism.
Fantastic. I'll tell you what, and Ron, let's end with this, because just in case we miss something, a message to our audience that you just want to kind of relate to them anywhere, you know, that our listeners all over the world would like to hear.
Well, first of all, you can get a hold of us at TexasBaseballRanch.com.
Perfect.
And I already said we would definitely send you a copy of the form that we use to send to the physical therapist. And that number again is 936-588-6762. Just ask, tell them that they heard about the podcast and they wanted to get the assessment form for their physical therapist. Lastly, I would like to say, I'd like to invite every one of the listeners. We have an elite, a coaches boot camp the first weekend of December. It is phenomenal. I've done it, this would be Joel and I's 19th year.
Wow.
And if you can't make the event, we also have DVDs of the event.
Of the event, yes.
And just the speakers this year are Brent Strom, who you've had on your podcast, who is the pitching coach of the world champion Houston Astros, who's a dear, close friend of mine. Derek Johnson, who is the pitching coach of the Milwaukee Brewers. We have Dewey Robinson.
Wow.
Dewey Robinson is the coordinator for the Tampa Bay Rays. We have Lee Fiocchi, who is the head strength coach of the Los Angeles Angels, and I believe one of the most bright, forward-thinking, progressive strength coaches in the world, a dear friend, and one that is very closely attuned to what we do at the ranch. Then we have Dave Lawn, who is the pitching coach at the University of Arizona, Ryan Dupick, the pitching coach at Concordia Lutheran in Seward, Nebraska, both incredibly bright coaches that use the ranch and have applied their own hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
I say that again.
Yep.
We have two of the best high school coaches in the state of Texas that have been students of mine for over 15 years, and I invited them to share their hybrid. They've been coming to this boot camp that we're holding. They've come for 15 straight years.
Wow.
So it's time for them to get on stage and say, here's what I learned. We also have Vern Gambetta, who is the father of functional movement.
Yep.
And then we have Trevor Reagan, who is a incredibly bright, intuitive guy that has a website called Train Ugly. And he really talks about how to create variable training and make your practice fun, and not only fun, but far more effective. Trevor Reagan. Then we have Randy Sullivan from the Florida Baseball Ranch. And then we have our staff. Coach Wallace, Flint Wallace, is going to be talking about the lower half, how to utilize the lower half. And we're going to have Oliver Cady talking about the Power Core 360 and synergy, how to teach connection via tubing and resistors and assistors. And then we have Jonathan Massey talking about recovery. And that's 3 days. And then, of course, I will have two presentations. And one I will be talking about is chaos training. And the other one I'll be talking about is connection, the very art of being connected.
Wow. I'll tell you what, you talk about a lineup of not just smart people, but progressive, like you said, you know, and outside the box thinkers and
no doubt
people that challenge the status quo, want to, you know, make sure that we're all doing things better. We definitely encourage you. I know our president, Tom O'Connell of the International Sports Group, has been to the convention before and just raves about it. I mean, it's the best teaching thing he's ever been to. So we encourage it. We're going to put it on the website. Ron, got to thank you. You know, we're talking about, hey, we went over way over the time that we normally go over, just not only because it's you, but also because of the importance of this topic.
Right.
That it, you know, we hope that, you know, something, there is no time limit sometimes with something so important. So
absolutely.
Thank you to you. Thank you to Jill. Thank you to Texas Baseball Ranch. We really appreciate you being on the show.
It's a pleasure. I look forward to doing it again in the future.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, that was Ron Wolford, the Texas Baseball Ranch. What a fantastic show. If you didn't get something out of that, you just were not listening well enough. You're going to have to go back and listen to the show again, because there are so many great things that were talked about on the show. I want to thank Ron Wolford, Texas Baseball Ranch. I also want to thank the Lineup Media Group, our host that does a great job, our producer, Brian Kroc. And, of course, our president, Tom O'Connell, who has been with us this weekend and did a great job presenting at the convention here in Auckland, New Zealand, in conjunction with the New Zealand Baseball Federation, Ryan Flynn, his outstanding staff. I want to thank all of them for being great hosts here in New Zealand. So, folks, don't forget, we'll be on next week. We want to thank you for being great, great guests, great listeners to the show. Continue listening to the show. Continue to challenge yourself every day as a coach. Always question everything you're doing. Find better ways to do something. And we want to thank you for being on the show. This is Pete Caliendo. I'm your host for Baseball Outside the Box from Auckland, New Zealand. And we will see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.